I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. Life is a cycle. There is a source from which life comes, and we are each connected to this source. At the heart of this source is the law of expansion and contraction. Like flowers, we're born in spring, blossom in summer, decay in autumn, and after the winter of our lives, we are destined to return to the earth. We descend from pure spirit into a physical vehicle and then ascend from our physical state back to pure spirit. This is the journey of creation, the cosmic journey of the soul. The soul travels from embodiment to enlightenment. We can choose to tap into the wisdom of times past, of our past lives, our ancestors' lives, the lives of enlightened beings, and the ancients. We exist as part of an infinite pool of wisdom. From this infinite source of wisdom and knowledge, we can develop our soul consciousness and the sacred essence we hold within. So this week's reading is from Opening to Spirit by Carolyn Shola Ariwa. Ariwa. So welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you've been here before and you listened to the last episode, thank you for joining us. So it's 2023 and I'm learning the language of caregiving. And in case nobody has told you, there is no training. There's no guidebook. And there's no orientation, just the reality that our lives are not our own anymore. And I want to be clear that being a death doula, even though it was an unintentional role, I would say, was definitely the honor of my life. I loved my mother, and her loss is immeasurable to me. And there were days when I didn't think I could make it without her. And at the same time, it was a hard time. And I just want to say it's okay to hold those complexities. It's okay to love the person you're caretaking and have resentment. It's okay to do the role and do it to your best ability and be resentful of it. It's okay to hold those complexities. So, as I said in the first episode, I wanted this to be a conversation. I don't want this to just be me talking about my story alone. And so we have our first guest. And, you know, my first guest is somebody that really held it down for me after my mom's passing. She was one of the six folks that really stepped in and right for the planning of the funeral. I wanted my mother's passing to be joyous. I wanted it to be something that was familiar to her spirit, but I also wanted it to be something that reflected the way myself and the community that I'm a part of live our lives. I wanted to show people how we do healing, how we do death. And the person that I'm about to introduce did just that. You know, they showed up, they set up altars, they cleared the space energetically, and it was beautiful. And she stayed afterwards, you know, once people started leaving, she stayed for a couple of days with her daughter. And honestly, the way that you showed up, I could never repay. I could never repay what you all did for me. So I just want to say that. Into the bio. Akinke Lewis has spent her life helping people move through deep transitions, just like I told you how she showed up for me. Akinke is an integrative healer and soon to be doctor in depth psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
With a specialization in integrative healing, initiated into diverse indigenous traditions, including Sangoma, Pago, Kuti Mesa, Ifa, and Hindu spiritual practices. She integrates ancestral wisdom, drama therapy, and Jungian and depth psychology to guide Black Indigenous people of color, particularly young adults, through generational and epigenetic healing, fostering deep transformation and reconnection. With a decade of travel, research, and immersion in Indigenous traditions, including years of intensive apprenticeship and study, Akinke's experiences inform her innovative healing model, which harmonizes energy frequencies to promote well-being. Her transformative journey includes ancestral apprenticeships in African and Asian traditions, immersing herself in cultures of Akan, Ashanti, Zulu, and Nubian. These experiences shape her compassionate, intuitive, and evidence-based practices. Through workshops and sacred communions with individuals and communities, Akinke draws on 20 years of ancestral wisdom to offer personalized healing modalities, empowering people to reconnect with their roots, heal deeply, and embrace their full potential. So, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to you. You see my little poem, Akinke. Again, I'm so grateful that you're here. I'm so glad that you're my first guest. A little behind the scenes. We've already had like an hour and a half conversation, probably longer. And I was like, oh, we should probably be recording. So,
it happens with me. So,
here we are, Akinke. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just like so excited for the conversation that we had and the conversation that we're going to continue. So besides the bio, how do you want to enter into this conversation? What do you want people to know?
So I got on this call, this gathering with you and I opened my space for my ancestors. I'm in the room where I place my offerings, yell, get screamed at by them, and okay. Just commune.
Yes.
And when you was reading the poem and when you were speaking, my father presented himself. And okay. So I said, well, let me speak on that.
Okay.
I am a foster child. I got into foster care when I was 7 years old, and I aged out at 21, 22. My first foster parents are the ones I call my mother and father. And I'm using that for clarification. So my father, he passed away from cancer in, was it 05? I couldn't have my years wrong. It was 05 or 09. I'm sure one of my siblings is going to correct me. And eventually, the more I talk, he passed away from cancer. But prior to that, my mother was paralyzed on one side of her body, and he took care of her for about 10 years. And my little sister, who was adopted at two, was the only one left in the house. And so when my father got sick again, when he came out of remission, between me and my other foster sister, we came into the house because now we took care of him. We got to take care of my mother. We got to take care of my sister. So we took shifts, shifts. And she came in the morning, stayed for like 3-4 hours. And I came for the rest of the day after I got for work. And then I left. So we was in shifts. Let's fast forward.
Yeah.
My father passes away. I am the last person he saw outside of my mother. Mm-hmm. I just gave him his medicine. He had to get a shot in his stomach. And he said, Lieva, I want to go. And knowing my mama, who she couldn't really speak well because she's paralyzed from having a stroke, she was like, go to bed then, Edward. What are you telling me for? That was her response. You know, she's like, mm-hmm. It's just, you could tell mm-hmm. how she, that's just how she was, right? Mm-hmm. And it was morning time. And he said something again. She turned and looked at him because she was sitting on the side of the bed. She turned and looked at him. And I had to go to work. And I left out the door. I literally just closed the gate of my parents' house when the nurse called me back and said, your father just passed. Mm-hmm. Go back up, turn around, go back up there, boom, boom, boom. My mother now is full care, is on the rest of the family. Primarily me and my 14-year-old sister. Mm. Right? And then when she got sick, she waited till my sister turned 18. This is how spirits do.
Yes.
Waited till she turned 18. I think she was 18 and a half, almost 19, when she was, my mother was like, enough is enough. By this time, she's 80-something years old. Okay. The day she passed away, I was in the hospital. Was me, my little sister was 18, 19, and my two children. And my mother looked up and she looked at us and she said, I want to go home. And she just had surgery and we was going to put her in a rehab hospital for a few months to help get her back to wherever she can be at 80 year old who just had surgery on her hip, right? And then bring her home. But she's like, no, I want to go home. So at first I thought she was talking about home. I want to go home.
Yeah.
But she saying it and kept saying it.
Yeah.
And then I turned and I looked at the doorway and I was looking at the children or whatever they was doing. And I saw my father. He looked like I could see you.
Mm.
And he walked into the room. Clear as day. Clear as day. Walked into the room. Walked up to the side of her bed. She looked up. I said, Edward, I want to go home. And I looked, now I'm looking at them both. And he's looking down on her. And she keeps saying, Edward, I want to go home. Go home. Take me home. Take me home. So then I realized, oh, because she's not talking to me now. She's talking to her husband, who she's been with for over 50 years, who passed away next to her in the bed.
Yes.
And I said, Mama, you ready to go home? And she looked at me and said, yes. And I said, okay, well, daddy's here. She's like, I know. She's like, I know. And I said, okay, you can go home. You can go home. And we left that night, me, my little sister, my children. I only got 40, maybe 45 minutes away from I just dropped my sister off and they called me and said, your mother just passed. And I turned around and I said, well, I did give her permission. She didn't.
You did.
She didn't need it. But I said, you can go home. Not only that, well, daddy did come pick her up.
So he showed up.
He walked in that room and he came and picked his wife up. He said, you ready? This is my translation now.
Yeah, of course.
Because I didn't hear him. I just saw him. Cleared as day.
Jeez.
Walk into that room. Stood by her bed. I saw her look up at him. Says his name. And because she was paralyzed, her language was distorted, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she go, Edward, is the tone, the fluctuation, how she speaks. You know, you get used to your parents who can't speak to someone who has, you get used to that and you recognize how they, what they're saying, boom, boom, boom. She said, Edward, I want to go home. So I knew she was talking to him because,
of course,
I'm not Edward.
Right. You
know, she's not looking at me. And I saw him walk in the room.
Right.
And so I when you were sharing in the beginning of this, that came to me, which means daddy walked into the room. And I think he walked into the room to say, We still here. We still here.
Yes.
And it's only moments when the veil is thin, like when my mother was making her way out.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to get her. Are we, some of us can see.
Yeah.
Can see them as clear as I see you and everything in this room, as clear as I touch this table, as clear as I touch my shirt, myself, or the person next to me. It's only when that veil is thin.
Yeah.
And well, I don't call myself a death doula.
Mm.
I have stood at many beds when a person was at that veil, transitioning out, taking their last breath, hearing my voice, sending their spirits back and saying, hey, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can go home, wherever you think home is at. In other words, you can let go.
Yeah.
And so they're still here.
Yes.
So that's what I want to bring into this space.
Yeah. Is
to acknowledge that they are still here.
Yeah. It makes me think about people kept saying, like, give your mom permission to go. And I didn't want to give permission to go. I was like, I don't want to do it. And when she passed, so this is where we get astrological and woo-woo. And we both have the same rising sign, you and I. Mm-hmm. And so I have a Capricorn rising or ascendant. And so my mother passed the day after the Capricorn full moon.
Mm.
And I knew that she was going to pass just because of the way the astrology was set up, because the way my astrology was set up, I just knew she was going to pass either on the full moon or very close. And I got the sense that if she lived past the full moon, that she might last a little bit longer. That was the sense that I got. Like, if she makes it through this full moon, she might be here a little bit longer.
Okay.
But, and maybe I'll share this in later podcasts, like the actual sort of lead up to her passing. But what happened was I got off the elevator and the nurses were like, she's here. It was a Monday. They were like, she's here. And I'm like, I'm here every day. What are they like? Why are they saying she's here? And so I went into the room and my mother had had a visitation with a friend of mine in the ether. Mm-hmm. And I just recounted some things from the conversation that my friend said, who's never met my mother. She was like, oh, your mother came in a dream and she said X, Y, and Z. And so I recanted what my mother had said. And I told her, you know, caring for you in this time was the honor of my life, and kissed her on the forehead and said, I wouldn't have had it any other way. Mm. And she took about 6 more breaths and then she passed.
Yeah.
And when I went to tell the nurses and I was talking to the nurses, and they said that they were surprised that she had made it through the weekend.
Look here.
Because they thought she was going to pass. And so when I got off the elevator, that's why they said she's here. Because they knew.
Yeah. She was waiting for you.
Yeah.
She was waiting for you. I corrected myself and said she didn't need my permission, even though I gave her permission.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when our loved ones, the only thing that keeps them here when they in this space is us, is loving us.
Yeah. It is.
Right? It's loving us and parents are going to do what parents are going to do to the day they take their last breath. You okay?
Yes.
You okay if I go? How you going to hold up? And once you, so I think I should change the word saying permission. I acknowledge that you was ready.
Okay.
I think I should change that. You know, when I acknowledge that they was ready to go and that it was okay with me and that I was going to be okay, they released themselves of this world.
And that's what I said to my mom too.
Yeah. I didn't give them permission. No. I just said, okay. It's okay.
Yep.
She was fine because she waited.
Yeah.
Almost 5 years till my sister got old enough.
Jesus.
Because when daddy passed, Kai was 14.
Mm.
And my parents were already older. They was already elders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she waited till the girl was almost 19 or 18 and a half years. At least till she was 18. Because she's a Taurus. Her birthday's in May. And Mama passed in June.
Okay.
I think it was June Mama passed. So she waited till she turned 18. You see what I'm saying?
So you're saying parents are going to do what they're going to do?
Yeah, our parents are always parenting.
Yes.
And so I think I'm going to change the word from saying I gave permission, or when we give permission for them to go, to more of I acknowledge that I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Or that we're going to be okay, because that's all they want to know.
Yes.
And so when I was like, you can go, you can go, Mama, we're going to be okay. She's like, okay, yeah. Fine. Same thing with Daddy. When Daddy was like, turned to her and said, Lieva, you know what I'm saying? I wanted something. She was like, go to bed. You all right? Go to bed, and turned and looked at him. He knew it was okay to go. You know, so many, those of my elders have passed away and I stood at their bed because they didn't have anyone, right? And because they didn't have anyone and they kind of adopted me.
Okay.
It was like me, or maybe one other person who's not their child, or because they didn't have children, or because their children wasn't around, whatever the reason may be, right? Mm. At each one of those, we had to say, we're going to be okay.
Mm.
Right? Whether we realize we are or not, whether we believe it or not, you know, we just had to say that for them to go, okay. Mm. And so either in that moment, they take their last breath, whether 30 minutes or an hour, or they wait till we leave and they take their last breath, but they have to know that we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right? That living is going to be okay, because I think at some point they realize that they're not truly gone.
Yes. You think so?
I do. I do. Mm. I think they realize at some point they're not truly gone. They're not physically here, but when you get that close to, it's like a baby being born, and me being a birth doula.
Yeah.
It's like when a baby comes in, that veil is still thin.
So thin.
That information that they leave behind or losing when they come in is that same information that we get when we're going through, right? Yeah. We have access to that. And so when you're that close to that veil, you hear, you see, and you have awareness.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like when I was giving birth to my daughter, the only thing I could think about was my son being okay.
Mm.
I'm in the throes of labor. Okay. Mm. But I got a call because my close friend, Lisa was picking up my son because I was in labor.
Mm-hmm.
And dropping him off to my daughter's father because I was in labor.
Yeah. Okay.
They couldn't find my son.
Okay.
He was lost. Our two grown folks go to the school. Nobody could find an 8-year, I mean, a 5.5-year old boy.
Look, oh, you were in labor?
No one can find him. Well, I'm in labor. He's 5. What do you mean you can't find him? He's at the school. He's at the daycare center. What are you talking about?
They be hiding.
Look, so I was more worried about my son being okay when I could have died on the table, is what I'm saying. Because labor is a death, is a possible death transition. Ooh. Right? Not only could I have died, my daughter could have been dying.
Yes.
But that was the furthest thing from my mind. What was from my mind was, is the one that's still here okay? And once they say, oh, we found him, he's okay. Cool. Yeah. Now let me do what I need to do here. I think that's the same thing when it is when we transition. Our loved ones, it's like, are you okay? And once you okay, cool. Now I can go do what I need to do here. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what it is. Because they got information that we ain't got. So they already cool with what they got to do. They like, we good here. But are you
interesting? Good? Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's what grief is about. Grief is about making sure that we're still okay.
Well, that's interesting. So you think that grief is about us, the people that are in grief?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a reminder that we're okay, that we're alive, that we're here? Do you think that's one of the roles of grief? Or what do you think?
I think, well, grief could be a multiple things. I think that's one of the reasons. So let me clarify that. It's not the only reason. I think it's multiple things, and that could be, that's one of them.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I look at grief and process grief, it's always about the living.
It is.
It's about the living and how we are managing with the person no longer here.
Yeah.
And we're grieving something that we either haven't experienced or won't ever experience again. And so we're trying to figure out how to manage that. And the confusing and the limbo state of that energy, it just takes us off balance. Not only that, there's a shift in the energy frequency.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out how to restabilize that so that when that shift is in balance, it takes our emotions and our mind to several different places.
Yeah.
And that is how, I think that is why we grieve, because we're struggling with those several different places and trying to find how to balance ourselves again energetically when we think and feel that we no longer have access to a certain energy.
Yeah.
And I said think and feel because depending on your belief system, that energy is still there.
Yes.
It's just shifted a little bit. It's like it's a chameleon. It changed its shape, you know? Yeah. And so I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think when we come to terms, the loss is going to always be there. That we can't get rid of, right?
Yeah.
Someone was there and we know they're not, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not negating that. But I think when it comes to terms of how to manage and balance out that energy that we think we no longer have access to, our world gets a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
And it's the managing out part that we have to figure out.
So one of the things that we talked about in our call before the call, the conversation before this conversation, the meeting before the meeting. The meeting before the meeting was the passing of your mom last year and the gifts that sort of what was left undone and what the gifts are and I guess how you've changed.
So the passing of my biological mother, because I mentioned my mother passed
Thank you.
Away. So, this is my other mother, because I have two.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
And it's challenging when both mothers go.
Yeah, right.
Both mothers and both daddies. Let's be clear. And so even though I was a foster child, my parents and my family, especially my mother's side, was very involved in my life. So I have two sets of parents. One was just needed help.
Yeah.
But they still was involved and it was a wonderful spirit. My mother was a wonderful spirit. Let me clarify that. No matter the struggles and challenges she had, her spirit was joy. Mm. It was a joyful spirit until it was not.
Okay.
Everybody on the planet.
That's everybody. Yeah, yeah.
It was not, right?
Yep.
So when my mother passed away last year, it was very unexpected. To some degree. She had a lot of health complications. So my spirit was like, because she was about to have she had just recently had a fifth surgery on her heart or in one of her veins of her heart, a stent. She had her fifth stent. And so I was worried from that something might have will happen. She was blessed to live a year after that stent, but the feeling. And then I got a dream. And let me share this. My mother passed away in January. I had a dream in December. In the dream, our friend G was in it. We was walking with all these people. There's a painting. Oh, it's on top. I can see it. There's a painting of indigenous people walking, being led and guided like by angel or whatever. Anyway, but take out the angel part. But that the masses of people walking, migrating. And in that dream, I'm walking and G walks up to me. Dr. G Love walks up to me in the dream and she says, "How do you do it?" And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? How do what? How do you manage all this energy, all this death, all this transition. I don't, she might not didn't use the word death, but she said all this transition. And I was like, I don't know. I just do. I don't know. I don't think about it. I woke up from that dream and I said, ooh, somebody's about to die.
Mm.
Because the question was, how do I manage all these transitions? And because I have had so many people transition, that was the first thing that came in my spirit, someone about to pass. And then after that, I was like, ooh, Angela, which is my mother. And I haven't said that to anybody. I don't think I shared that with my siblings because of grief, right? And then in January, unexpectedly, she passed away. Now, when she left, you know, as family do, they go through the shift and the instability of adjusting when the person's not there. But what I think we don't realize is her closest ones, her children, maybe her spouse or whatever, that for me, children, that they leave something behind. They still leave work for you to do. And I think I was saying earlier that what that work is the work that you do on yourself because they're part of it,
yeah.
Right? And our parents are human and they have their own traumas. And that trauma can be intergenerational passed down to us, right? Those traumas can be epigenetically passed down to us. And we are just not aware of it because it's everyday life. It's everyday life. It could be.
It's just our parents.
It's just our parents. Who are
it's
we?
It's just how they are.
Right. That, oh, your behavior is a wrong behavior. We have no clue that this is a wrong behavior. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We have no clue that you are doing this based on how somebody mismanaged you as a human. You know what I'm saying? We have no clue of that. We look at our parents and we go, oh, okay, and keep on moving. And then when we get adults and we recognize that these patterns of behavior are dysfunctional or harmful or whatever these things is, then we get mad and angry, right?
Yes.
Because now we recognize it. But we get mad and angry at the person versus understanding that this is a result of trauma.
Yes.
And while I'm not making an excuse by far, that it's still trauma, right?
Yeah.
And they don't intentionally give you their trauma. They're like, hey, take this from me and go shopping with it. No, you're their children. You're the closest thing to them ever outside of their parents. And they naturally been who they are. And so therefore it's going to naturally fall down onto your branches. That's just the way of life, right? It's going to grow out of you. And then when they leave, it doesn't go away. It just looks differently because now that's your trauma, right? A speck of that, let me say that, not all of it, because you didn't experience the experience that they did, right? You're getting the residual effects of it, but you're still getting some of that. And so you're still left with that. You still grew that. You still have it in your soul, your soil, in your soul. And so you're still left with that. And then you have nurtured it to fit who you are. You have groomed it to feel and look like what you got going on in your life. And you have now have utilized it as a tool to get you through life. Mm-hmm. Because that's what she was taught to do, unbeknownst to you and unbeknownst to the person teaching it. So now you have to sit here, you know, and deal with it. But you don't know that until, and this is my what happened to me. You don't know that until the person transition. You don't experience that until that person transition because they've been carrying the weight of it because it was theirs, right? It was theirs. And so it's like when a tree grows, the bark of that tree is the strongest part of that tree. But if you uproot that tree or if that tree breaks, what happened to the branches? What happened to the roots? Some of them get left in the ground. And then the roots that's in the ground, they start to grow and still, you know, come up and still do whatever. But that root was part of that tree.
Mm.
And some of those branches that was on the tree that fell had seeds on them.
Mm.
And what happened to those seeds? They fell into the ground and they replanted themselves. And that starts to grow up. And you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Conform and adapt to the new thing that you are, new energy that you are. And when that tree is now gone, so there's nobody there to hold the bulk of it, is what I'm saying.
Because now they're gone.
Because so they're can't, gone.
So, and so even with our anger or whatever, we have nowhere to put it if we don't have spiritual practices, which I want to talk about next. Because the spiritual because the person is gone. If y'all hear a noise, it's me banging on the wall. It's me emphasizing by hitting the wall.
They're gone. It goes back to the
they're gone
physically,
and we're still here.
And they're gone physically. And I want to go back to when I said yes. Grieving is about how we manage the shift of energy, right?
Yeah.
And so if we put that spiritually, because we talk about energy now, right?
Yeah.
Put that to the physical, we still have the roots of the trauma, the residual, and we have grew up and adapted to our own life, right? Yeah. So now that we no longer have someone holding the bulk of our energy, managing it, and so we don't have to face it, we don't have to recognize it, we don't have to confront it, we don't have to deal with it fully. You know what I'm saying? We don't have to dig to the root of it. When they're gone, we now have to manage that. And we don't do it alone. Remember, daddy's in the room. The ancestors in the room. We don't do it alone. But how do we manage that, right? How do we manage that? And you mentioned practices and things like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? How do we manage confronting all the things that we may not have been aware was our issue?
Yeah.
Right. I think I briefly touched that. I was talking to a family member. Was it a family member? Child, it might have been a man off the street. But
I got to go.
Not a man off the street. Oh, no, some random person. I don't know. But no, I was talking to someone and they were saying, they was asking me about tradition and, you know, I'm speaking of emotional regulation, I'm dealing with anxiety and stress. And I said, one thing that's great to have is routine, right? Help manage some of that. And in routine, if you do too much, anything you do too much can be an issue, right? But if you have no routine, you don't have no groundiness. And routine helps ground you. And so when we're dealing with grief, I always recommend talk to your peoples. Talk to your underground gang, because they're still here. And that helps you manage some aspect of your grief, not all of it. Because remember, you still got to deal with your residual stuff, right? But it lets you manage some aspect of your grief when you talk and commune with your ancestors. However, when you're angry,
when
you're angry, when you're mad, when you have issues, unresolved issues, and you're frustrated, and this is the time when you can't. And that was the question. There was, you know, there was like, well, my mother, I said, well, hold up. What place are you in with your mother? Where you at? Did you hate your mother when you was here? did you hate her? You know what I'm saying? Was you not talking to her? What was going on? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That has to be cleared up first, because that's trauma, right? And if you call and start to communicate with your ancestor and you mad every time you call their name, they're not going to benefit you. You mad. Because when you think of them, you don't think of them in a good way. You don't think of them in a joyful way. You think of them angry and frustrated, shame. Whatever it is that's surrounding them is a negative energy. And so you can't work with them to help with your grief, because it's just going to trigger or activate your trauma.
Well, yes. And so to me, that makes me ask the question then, because lots of people have extreme issues with their ancestors for good reason. So, but one of the things I do say to people is the ancestors don't have to be bloodline. Like, you can work with people would you say, sort of from your experience, that would be the best route for that?
Mm-hmm.
For them what do you think the response is?
Let me, just for clarity, I'm not saying don't have an altar up for them. I'm not saying that I'm saying to call on them to do work is what I'm speaking
about.
Because that activates negative energy and your work is going to be stagnated, dysfunctional, boom, 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 boom. But yes, just to sit there and work, you can work with your ancestor while they're not here. You can still work on your mom and daddy issues with them while they're not here, you know, so you can still
do. Yeah.
And that's usually what I recommend.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I did.
Yeah. Work with them. How you work with them on your relationship. You know, that's still part of helping you with your grief. Now, I'm not saying do it alone, because sometimes you can't do it alone, depending on what it is. You may have to have a person there with you. How that looks, I can't speak. Everybody is different.
Okay. Everybody is different. True.
You know what I'm saying? Some people may have a therapist. Some people may do hypnotherapy. Some people will work with indigenous. I prefer doing indigenous practices that way. You know, so I can't say how that looks for each person, because it's different. Right.
Yeah.
But what I will say is, if you want your ancestors to work for you and for your life to be smoother, you're going to have to work on that relationship before you put them to work. Right.
Absolutely.
And so that is when you sit down and you're working on how to manage your grief. But that managing your grief means also dealing with your trauma. A lot of people who get into a deep, 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 I'm about to kill myself type of grief. And you, let me unalive myself type of grief.
Thank you.
It's because they're still dealing with unresolved trauma.
Yeah.
And it's anger, and they're mad because of the loss, and they can't go back and fix whatever it is they want to fix. They may never did anything. It could have been their parents who did it.
Yeah.
But they can't fix it. They no longer have the opportunity to say, why did you do this? Let's talk about it. Can we resolve this? They no longer have that opportunity. So that deep, deep grief that we're in, where we hear depression, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes evolves around because it's something unresolved.
Yeah.
You know? How do you fix unresolved issues?
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. We're going to dive into that too in the next episode. So it's like, you already jumped into the, because we're going to dive into that, like what that looks like. So you've done so much caretaking in your life. Did you ever feel like you were disappearing into the role of caregiving? And if you haven't, if you've seen that happen to other people, how could somatic healing help with that?
Yes, on both levels.
Okay.
People disappear in a role all the time, especially as caregivers. Especially as caregivers. If you are responsible for someone else, you forget who you are. Point blank.
That's parents. That's caregiving, period. That's
caregiving, across the board. Period. If you are responsible for someone else, you will forget who you are. You have to work every day to keep you as you. Because you're so focused on the other person you're caring for, their needs, their wants, their feelings, their desires, you know, how they respond today, keeping them safe, protection, that you don't have time to focus on you.
Yeah.
Right?
Like you said, we're about to give birth and you're worried about your other
child. The 4-year-old boy who probably was over there playing with a little friend and the teachers didn't.
Having the best time.
The best time of their life. We don't know what the little boy was doing.
I had the time of my life.
Come on now. You better sing that. One of my favorite shows. But I don't know what the little boy, you know, I should ask him. He's 30-something years old now. I should ask him, what was you doing when I was giving birth to your sister? You
did having a good time.
Well, he was having a good time. You know.
Kicking.
So we lose ourselves. We lose ourselves. I know. With me caretaking, there's something that when I realized I was losing myself, two things. The first thing I started to doing was setting time aside. I had to force myself to do it. But an elder once said to me, and I say this too, and I swoop it around, but it's still the same thing. If you're not happy, they can't be happy. If you sad, they're going to be sad. If you didn't eat, guess what? Eventually, they're not going to eat because you're not going to be able to do the things you need to do to put food on the table. You're going to get sick. It's all a trickle-down effect. So take care of you first. It's that airplane effect. Put your mask on first, right? It's always that. So set time aside. So me being a teen mom, right? was taught, and I didn't realize this until years later when I started doing elderly care, you know, was taught to, when you go out and you buy your children something, get a little piece for you. Mm-hmm. That model I took mm-hmm. with me throughout my life.
Wow.
So when I was when my daddy was passing, when my mama was passing, when my Gus was passing, when Gus was passing, when all these elders was passing in my life, right? And I'm caretaking them, you know, making sure they eat, all the things you got to do in caretaking, right? Mm-hmm. I always would set a time for me.
Yeah.
I always would set a time for me, because if I didn't, everybody would get cussed out.
Yeah.
And some of that, it involves, my mama loves plants. She loves flowers. She's always been mm-hmm. in the garden flowering. And of course, when she got sick, she couldn't do it no more. So we would take her to the dollar store and buy little flowers for her. Right. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I would go to the store sometime and just get flowers to bring to her. Right. Mm-hmm. But in that, you wouldn't see me for hours and hours and hours. Mm. Why? Because I was taking time for myself. And that may look like, oh, I'm going, you know, if you can't go to a spa, I'm going walking because I love walking in the park. Right. I'm walking in the park, or I may go into the yard because I like planting stuff, going in the yard and planting garden, you know, stuff like that. I used to love exercise, still do like exercise, and I may be doing some of that, that movement, right? That movement for me, I used to go and sign up to dance classes because I like to dance. I think in one of my lives, I used to be a dancer. I don't know, but I, you know,
yeah.
I loved it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And even though I really ain't that great of a dancer, just being able to go and take that moment for an hour. You know, and the struggle that I found is because caretaking elders while I still had children mm-hmm. is a thing. So while you may be able to get away from the elders for a little bit, you sometimes you can't get away from the kids, especially if you're a single mother. So how is that going to work? You integrate. So while I was dancing, my children was playing the drums. It wasn't for them, it was for me. I take African dance class, and all of a sudden, yeah, up for the drum. Oh, they got drum for them. They over there in a different class because this is what I want to do. So yeah. I had to integrate the method. You could figure out a way. And while you may say, I can't afford to do things like that, I'm not saying go spend a whole lot of money to find your peace of mind, right?
Yeah.
With technology, you could put up a YouTube video and be just fine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What I am saying is, even if you went once a month to do something for you, you need it. Another thing, and this is just, I'm just talking about somatically.
Yes, exactly.
Somatically would need. You need outlets, right?
Absolutely.
When I work with children, especially young adults who care, we don't realize that our young adults care. Like I told you, my sister was 14. My sister was 14 years old when my father passed. Her mother, which is my mother, was paralyzed on one side of her body. She's the only one in the house. My brother moved in the house. He was in the house, let me say that. He's older than me, but if we know anything about men usually, especially older men back in the day, they leave all the caretaking for women to other women. So my 14-year-old sister was the caretaker of my mother when we wasn't around because I had to work. I didn't live in the house. I came there in the morning. I got there in the evening, stayed to about 11, 12 o'clock at night, and then I left if I chose to leave that day. You know what I'm saying? Because the kids had to go to school, boom, 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 boom. But this 14-year-old girl was in the house the whole entire time. Where's she going?
Mm-hmm.
She caretaking. She get up in the middle of the night when mama needs something, mom crying because she in pain, turn her over, doing this and that, changing her pamper, doing a whole, she's 14. Mm-hmm. And so what I would do with her was say, hey, let's go beat this thing up. She's like, what? Let's go beat this thing up. We have pillow fights, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Boxing thing. What you want to do to get that mm-hmm. movement out of her, right? Then I taught her how to do things with her hands. I taught her how to sew. You know, hey, won't you learn? Because she likes fashion, right? Mm-hmm. You want to know how to make that clothes that you like? Told her how to use a sewing machine. Told her how to sew her hand. These still are small individual somatic things. Then she started making purses and boom, boom, boom. It did two things. It got her mind off of the fact that she felt like she couldn't leave her house because one, she thinks she left, her mama might die like her daddy did. So that's the first thing. It got her mind off of that. Two, it got her moving her hands and doing and creating something that she can see.
Moving that body.
You know what I'm saying? So it got her doing mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Then these are just little things. You know, just little things you can use for yourself. While she was in young child care, caretaking part-time, the same thing for adults. You still got to move your body. You still got to move your mind. You still got to move your mind.
Yeah.
And move that energy. Yeah. No matter how small the spurts of energy you help release, whether it's sewing or something, you know, creating something, that energy is still being released from your hands.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So find that joy. You don't, it's not always about doing yoga. Well, I like yoga. It's not always about doing yoga. It's not always about doing breathing techniques. Just had deja vu. It's not always about doing breathing techniques. Well, I like breathing techniques. And yes, all of it is needed. Everybody don't have access to it.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because I want a break for a breathing technique right now. Because we're definitely talking about things that, you know, can bring up emotions for folks. And, you know, shout out to all the people who have sent me texts saying how the first episode impacted them and brought things up for them and brought them to tears and has been really cathartic. So I know that this conversation can do that. And I know that this conversation will do that. So I just want to invite you. Now, listen, if you're in the car, don't do that, because I don't want y'all saying, I was listening to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers, and she told me to close my eyes while I was driving.
Don't close the eyes.
If you're in the car, don't do this, okay?
But you know,
and drink something, okay? Akinke and I are both drinking water. Looks like Akinke has some lemon in hers. So stay hydrated. All right.
Keep your eyes open if you're in the car.
And keep your eyes open, okay? Please. Por favor. Okay. So I'm just going to ask you to... go ahead and let those shoulders drop. And again, if you're in a space where you can do this, we just want to take a little pause. Maybe just do a little body scan. So that might mean letting the top lid close over the bottom lid or fall over the bottom lid. Taking a deep breath in through your nose. Filling up that belly with your breath, exhaling through the mouth. And in that body scan, just do a little check-in where you might be holding tension. Maybe in your shoulders, maybe in your jaw. So we want to release that, right? We know we have all types of things that happen in the body when we start to hear things and have different emotions. So maybe just go ahead and, you know, see, sense, or imagine if there's some old emotions lingering around. Maybe you can imagine those things falling around your feet like leaves. Taking another deep breath in, holding it, let it go. One more inhale. Maybe this is the biggest inhale yet. Hold it. Exhale out. And then just open your eyes. And I wonder if you could notice five things that you can see in the room. Maybe it's the light coming through the window. Maybe it's the paint on the walls or the wallpaper. Just let your eyes dance around the room. Maybe it's a piece of furniture. Maybe it's clothes on a chair, a pillow. Just five things to notice. And now something you can touch. Maybe it's the fabric of your clothes. Maybe it's the weight of your body in the chair. Something you can touch. Maybe it's your thumb pressing into your index finger. And what do you hear right now? Maybe there's some outside street noise, some children playing. What do you hear? Air conditioning running. And then just take your biggest breath in yet. Hold and release. The last thing you're going to do is see, sense, or imagine a beautiful yellow sun over your head. And maybe there's a magnet in the middle of that sun. And you're just going to call all your energy back. Call all your energy back from this conversation so far, from any conversations you had today. And just pull that sun in through the top of your head, filling yourself back up with your own energy. You are here in present time. And then let's touch our index finger with our thumb, touch our middle finger with our thumb, touch our ring finger with our thumb, touch our pinky with our thumb, touch our pinky with our thumb, touch our ring finger with our tongue, not our tongue, our thumb, touch our middle finger with our thumb, touch our index finger with our thumb. And then when you're ready, open your eyes. Back in present time. So as we begin to wrap up this conversation, and definitely, Kinke, you're going to have to come back because this has been so good. So for me, one of the things I struggled with, it was the mix of emotions. And we kind of talked about that, the love, the resentment, all of those things wrapped up. So it wasn't just the grief. It was the anger and the frustration, right? And feeling guilty for that at the same time. So how might you help people sit with those conflicting feelings without shame?
That's a tough one, but it's a good one. Mm-hmm. It's a good one because I struggle with this. I want to make this very clear about two things. The first one is no emotion is a wrong emotion. Mm. No emotion is a bad emotion. You are entitled to feel all the things you need to feel because there's reasons behind those feelings. They didn't just come out the blue. Is how you respond to the emotions is what we're trying to figure out, right?
Yeah.
So I struggle with, and I'm using my mother for, you know, my mother because she's the most current one. And she's the one that I caretaken my mother most of my adult life.
Okay.
And then we talk about my biological mother. She lived with me most of my adult life. I took care of her, made sure her doctor's appointment. I did all the things, right? And this is off and on, but most of my adult life. Mm-hmm. So the last, I'm going to say 5 years. In the last year with my mother, she was going through some changes, which made it conflicted or confusing for the both of us.
Okay.
And in her fashion, she responded the way that she does, which was trauma filled. And in my fashion, I'm like, okay, well, we got to figure out some stuff because I ain't doing this, right? And so because of that, I wasn't present the last few months of her life. Mm. And in all honesty, I'm not upset or mad about that. I have no regret, no shame, because I'm the type of person that once I make a decision, it's usually for the benefit of both of us to heal and not be harmed. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's for me. I don't like anyone abusing me, regardless of who you are, right? Mm-hmm. And because they are parents does not mean they are exceptional of not being abusive.
That's right.
And so I was okay with the fact that I didn't speak with her. What I struggle with is holding space for my siblings who do not understand that. And that feeling of what's the word I'm looking for? The feeling of, I messed up, right? Maybe I should have did this differently. Is that not that I'm upset about it? It's just that if I've known what I know,
I get it. Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe I would have had more space and grace, that confliction. And so I bounced between the no, you did right because it kept you safe and out of harm. Yes. And they're the parent. Are they the adult, you know?
Yeah.
And then I struggle with, well, if I knew that what she was doing and that's why she was defined that way, I could have had more understanding. And here's the thing. That's an individual thing. If everyone don't feel and think the same way that I feel and think, right?
Yeah.
Me being a person who holds grace and compassion for people, mm-hmm. I've struggled with that. And so how I manage that, and it really gets hard with that when your sibling would say things, I know you didn't like your mother.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like my mother. I ain't the one who took care of her all our lives. I loved the hell out of her because I wouldn't took care of her all her adult life and my adult life, right? Where do you get that from? But because of my actions, it's like, oh, you must didn't like it because you didn't talk to her, blah, blah, blah. And so all those feelings start to come into place. I'm like, that's not the case. I loved her greatly. And because I loved her greatly, I gave her space. Right? And so that's when it hits hard more, is when those things happen. And so when that happens, I do two things. Emotional regulation is having a way to release your emotions, be aware of your emotions, and able to respond to your emotions where you are not causing harm to yourself or to others. To process them in a manner where, oh, let me see how I could do this, but it could benefit you and me. Right? And that means taking your time. That's the foundation. I'm not giving you a Webster definition of emotional regulations, right? But I'm just giving you a synopsis. This is my version of it. And so when I'm in that heightened state of feeling all those things about my mother, I take 10 beats, 10 heartbeats, right? I take 10 heartbeats and I bring myself down. And my go-to, while I'm not a Christian, I love gospel music.
Okay.
You may not find me in the church. But you're going to hear a good gospel song blasting because
period.
You know what I'm saying?
Period.
We can remove some of the words if I want to, but the energy frequency that replace what I'm feeling with joy is there.
Oh, I love that.
Right?
Transmutation.
Right. And so that's, and I know that's what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
And so I turn on a gospel good. And let me, the ancestors are always speaking because what they also would do when they know I'm in that place, they send a song to me.
Mm.
And I'd be singing it all day. And I mean, it always be gospel, the majority of it is, but I'd be singing it all day, right? And I'm like, I gotta go find that song because I'm transmuting that energy frequency. I took that 10 heartbeats. I said, let me stop. Let me stop. Let me not do this. And I'm walking around my house. And I'm, because my shoes off, no house shoes on.
Yes.
I may even go outside, you know what I'm saying? But I need to find something to get this off of me that's not harmful to me or you. And mine is gospel music, right? At one point, it used to be dance. Another point is it's quieting my mind, you know, if people can do that. Everyone can't sit down and quiet their minds. Or letting all the stuff that's in your head flow freely to there's nothing in your head. There's two ways to do it. If you can quiet your mind, great. If you can't, let all the things that's in your head come. Don't focus on anything. Just let it come and flitch out your brain. And then by the time your mind go blank, you have arrived to a place. But don't focus on that energy, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it also, for me, water. I have to have word. What I've learned about, you have to find your thing, right? You have to find your thing. The thing is about handling your grief and your emotion is about learning who you are. Mm-hmm. So you have to find your thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to swim. Mm-hmm. Zoe, I don't know how to swim. I could do a little something. Mm-hmm. But water releases me.
Me too.
And so I will go and fake float.
Oh, okay.
10 seconds, then back on my feet. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But just being in the water or being around the water calms my spirit.
Yeah.
Some people is fire where they gotta sit in front of a fireplace or hammer something, you know, yeah, like they're building. You know what I'm saying? Some people, yeah, it is singing, because that air,
yeah,
that vocalness, you gotta sing, yeah, to transmute that energy. You know, some people was playing, mm-hmm, or planting in the dirt, you know, or running barefoot in the dirt or playing on instrument. Like, because to me, yoga and things like that is earth things, because you do that usually with no shoes on your feet.
Yeah.
And if you was outside, I'd just be climbing upside down on a tree. You know what I'm saying? Think about it. Mm-hmm. Hanging upside down, mm-hmm, on a tree. You doing splits. You stretching. That's all earth work. You know what I'm saying? Go outside and do that. You know what I'm saying?
It is. Tree pose, downward dog.
So, mm-hmm, you have to find your thing to transmute that energy. Writing can be a thing, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people use poetry all the time. And I think we need to understand and have clarity that perfection doesn't exist.
Mm.
You don't have to be perfect.
And that includes the breathing. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, love. Go ahead.
And that includes the breathing. Yeah. Go ahead. That's what you're going to say.
I was going to say, and that includes the grieving process. There's no perfect way to grieve.
There's no right or wrong way. Right. But you have to find something to outlet that's not going to harm you. Like drinking and smoking, having sex with random strangers, all those things can harm you, put you in situations that you can wake up from, like, what the hell did I do? Or can't even remember. These doesn't benefit you. You know what I'm saying? You have to find, what are the things that you always wanted to do, but you either was too scared to do it, or you had nobody to do it with? You know what I'm saying? Or you think you didn't have enough money to do it. Put you first.
Yes.
Put you first. What is that thing? It could be sculpting. Yes. It can be, you know, I like to make things with my hand. What I'm making, I don't know. I ain't never, mm-hmm, did it before. You don't know. You don't need to know how to do a thing to do it. You, mm-hmm, see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's what about being creative. Creativity is so important for the releasing and transmuting of energies that we do not want.
Yes.
I mean, it's cute to talk to your friends. That's cute. But they ain't you.
That's right.
That's you breathing out that air is only a little bit of what you're going through. You talking to therapists and all that is yes, you do need those things. I'm not saying you don't. Working with indigenous practitioners, yes, but that's only a percentage. You still walk away sometimes with that energy on you. You could breathe a little bit for that moment, but what about the rest of them?
My Reiki master tells the story of this person that came to them with a limp. And my teacher worked on them. And they were like, I feel great. I feel amazing. And my teacher watched them walk down the street. And they took 2 or 3 steps. And then they started limping again.
Mm-hmm.
And that always stuck with me, especially as a Reiki practitioner myself, right? It's like, we get that moment of, yeah, I feel great from that interaction,
mm-hmm,
that spiritual moment, that thing. But once we get off the table, or we leave the yoga studio, or we leave the bar, or we leave the bed of the stranger, because we've chosen to relieve our grief in that way, we're still with ourselves. I said it.
You're still with ourselves. Because what happens when you engage with others, they take some of that from you without them realizing it. Even if you just sit on a subway and you're not talking to nobody and you're just looking at everybody, you know, and you laugh at the person that's across from you because you're like, what in the hell they got on? Or you see something funny, you go to the, you know, whatever. They are taking a piece of your energy from you that lightens your load. That's what community is important. Community done the right way. Let me be clear about that.
Yeah.
Not the right way, but a healing in
a healing way.
Mm-hmm. No community the right way, but in a healing way that doesn't harm you. takes it a little bit, that pressure off of you, right? Yeah. But what we struggle with, especially as people of color, because we, being in this diaspora community, we don't have this, we, our space been taken away from us, is sitting down and working with ourselves, right? And I'm not talking about just sitting there and talking and think about your trauma all day and reflecting that you did something bad and wrong. We're not talking about the negative aspect. We're talking about working with yourself, meaning find out what makes you feel happy or joyous. Not contentment, not pleasurable. And pleasure counts, but not just because pleasure is fleeting. But happiness and joy lasts for a while, because once you find out what brings you that happiness and joy, you will constantly keep doing that. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? If you find joy in skydiving, this is a horrible example.
Great example. It's a great example.
You don't keep on skydiving, but you know, but see, yeah, like you like to do motorbikes. Okay, my daughter learned how to surf. Let me use that. If you find, you say, oh, I'm going to go learn how to surf. And you get out there on the board. You ain't never rode a wave a day in your life, but you was able to lay on that board flat and do a little bit. And that brought you the most happiness and joy, because that's not bringing you no harm. You're going to keep on wanting to do that because you're chasing that feeling. It's almost like addiction. Think about it. You're chasing that high. You're chasing that joy. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And that might be not a good comparison, but it's the same thing. That joy and happiness that doesn't cause you harm, you're going to constantly keep doing that. And then once that wanes away, you're going to find a new thing that brings you joy and harm that does not bring you harm.
Yeah,
because that's what creativity is. And there's, you don't have to be perfect at it. You don't have to know what you're doing. It start with you just doing it, and you are so caught up in it that guess what you're not doing? All that negative stuff you was thinking about.
Yeah,
start thinking positive stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm sitting here working. Guess what I'm thinking about? My mom and daddy. Mm-hmm. Oh, mama used to like planting these roses. Even if I cry.
Mm-hmm.
She like planting these roses. I'm gonna get these roses. Oh, I hear her telling me I ain't doing that right. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's gonna make you cry because you miss them, but you're also happy because there's nothing wrong with crying and missing someone. You see what I'm saying? And there's nothing wrong with acknowledging that they're not here, but you're not mad or angry. Ride the waves of the emotion and accept them for what they are, because they're not gonna change. Not right
that.
Now into the next life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so ride that, acknowledge that, embrace that, and be like, oh, I plant this rose next to this thing. My mom gonna cuss me out. Let me move this. You know what I'm saying? I do it all the time. Because they showed up in the room. That's why I said daddy walked into this room. Acknowledge that daddy just walked into the room. I did a few weeks ago. My cousin invited me. She does this emotional lunch break, and she invited me to come speak. And when she was introducing me, because she's my cousin, she said something about that I'm bringing the ancestors into the room. Blah, 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 boom. I don't know what she said. To be honest, I don't know what the girl said. She probably just said hello. Look, I don't know what she said. But when she said it, she mentioned my mother's name. And when I tell you, I broke down. And that was just a couple weeks ago. And I said, give me a moment, y'all. Give me a moment. She done brought Angela into the room. Because she did. She brought it into the room. And not just because she said her name, because she's my family.
Yeah.
My cousin, her mother was in the space, which is my aunt. So I already had the energy frequency there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what she said about my mother. I couldn't remember what she said about my mother. She brought her in the room, and I just became overwhelmed. I said, give me money. I said, oh, I'm sorry. No, no, no. Thank you. Thank you for bringing her into space. Because she sure enough was that. She was a hot mess. Let me have this moment. I need it. I need it. You see what I'm saying? I need the tears. I need that. Oh, my mama ain't here. You know what I'm saying? I needed that. Let me have that moment. Thank you. Yeah. You know, all right, now let's move on. I tried it.
I love it.
Came out. I was doing this, trying to still be professional. Thank y'all. You know what I'm saying? Oh, Angela, why would you do this to me, girl? You know what I'm saying? She right. She did do A, B, and C, Cousin Jan. She did. Woo. And then I got myself, boom, boom, boom. I said, all right, now, let's jump into it. Because we're talking about ancestors. And she got it. She came into the space. Have that moment. I think a lot of times we're ashamed because we're not, especially as Black. I don't mean to say Black people or people of color, but because this is who I'm thinking of in the space. It's all people, but I can only speak for,
you know, obviously.
Right. So for people of color, we have been restricted of our emotions.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So we hold them close to heart.
Yes.
I do it, trust me. And so we're not quick to cry. We're not quick to accept how we feel. We think it's a bad thing. We think it's not okay. Yes. We think all these
things. Yes.
And that's far from the truth. Have your emotions. Have your moment. The reality is not about your emotions, how you respond. Are you beating somebody up the head because you have an emotion? That's a problem. Are you cussing people out? Are you talking bad about them? Are you mistreating them? Are you abusing them? Are you doing all those things that make them feel less than who they are? Those are the problems. If you ain't doing any of that, have your emotions.
We deserve the full range.
You deserve the full range. Anger, sadness, joy. In that moment, don't have it 10 hours later.
Yeah. And I love, and then we'll start to wrap up, but I love my my younger friends, the way that they raise their children, because if their children are feeling something, they'll say, oh, I see you're having big emotions.
My daughter,
what?
Look, my daughter, we was in it. I'm sorry.
I love that.
I love it too. It's funny because my daughter used that word. We was in an airport and this man was having big emotions. And he hit. Anyway, he couldn't emotionally regulate and he did something and he hit the agent. It was a whole big thing in the airport.
Oh my God.
And my daughter said, oh, he's having big emotions.
I like she big emotions.
She was loud. Everybody turned and looked at her. She was dying laughing.
Was.
She
was
like, oh, he's having big emotions.
He was having big emotions.
He was having big emotions. He didn't know how to regulate them.
He didn't know how to regulate.
And I agree. The young people are teaching their children about, one, acknowledging and being aware of their emotions, having their emotions, letting them have it. Let them have emotion. And they also teaching them, hey, but we don't behave this way because you're hurting not only other people, but yourself. I love that for us.
I love it too. I love it.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yes.
And that's how we have to do with ourselves.
Yeah.
We allow it for other people.
Yeah.
But we struggle with allowing it for ourselves. And I think that's where our grief get heavy. It's because we're fighting grief.
Mm.
We're fighting it because we think it's not okay.
No,
also,
let it go.
Spiritually, we have been stripped from the way we do our grieving traditions.
Of course.
And so because we don't have grieving traditions in place, we don't know how to maneuver and manage and do all the things. You know what I'm saying? You know, we don't sing and dance. You know, grieving for most traditions that's not Western takes 30 days or more. It's a whole big thing. You know, New Orleans have a little bit of it. You know, they're marching. I mean, they're parading down the street. They're dancing. They can have a little bit of it. They do a couple days. That's a little bit of that tradition, which is wonderful to see. But usually it takes 30 days of that. Maybe not on a big scale. When I was in Bali, for 3 months, almost 6 months, because I left for like a week and came back. I stayed in the Mosh village, which is the traditional village of but one of the traditional village of the Bali people. And I stayed with the Moss family, local Moss family. Local.
Yeah.
I'm in it, baby.
Yeah.
And one of their elders passed away, transitioned. They was preparing for 2 months. They was building big structures. And when I say big, these things are 100 feet tall. 50 foot wide. It took 1,000 men to carry and hold it. But you know what they was doing? They was transmuting their energy because they building. All the men are building this in the village. They're coming together. They're talking to each other. They supporting each other in their building. They're somatically moving their energy by building a structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was designed by the women.
mm-hmm.
The women said, this is what supposed to look, this is the color it's supposed to have, this is what it needs to wear. You know, the women is doing all the things, they just have their role differently. You know what I'm saying? And then not only that, but the people got to get fed when they all come together, you know, to build this thing. So it was so much, this whole village took almost 60 days to build these big structures. And it was more than one. It was like three of them. And then they, all the men that could, came and they lift these big structure up and they ran through the village and took it to the grave site or the cemetery site. And then they put burnt it because one of the big sculptures, you know, had the person in it, the physical body in it. One of them did, and I'm not sure which one. And then they set that one on fire and it burned up, right? It's a pyre. But this is community acting. This is traditions because in that other stuff is going while they build and the other stuff is going, right? Grief is being taking place. People are hugging and loving and supporting the family, you know, feeding them like we do. We still feed our family when someone died, feeding them, coming there, cleaning their house, make sure they had this and that, you know, while it's still doing all this other things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Cleaning out the house for them. That takes that. You just can't clean your loved one house out in 2 days.
That's right.
I mean, it can be done.
You kidding?
It can be done, but emotionally.
What? I still, you know, I got people renting my house, and my mother's, there's a whole bunch of stuff still there.
Right. You know what I'm saying? And
it takes time.
It doesn't mean you get rid of all this stuff. It means you tackle what you need, and you give it to a community member.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You pass it. This is not. This is.
It takes time.
Case?
Yeah, it takes time.
Are gone. We do that in our traditions. When I was in Ghana, I was talking to a young lady. Her, I forgot who passed away. All the women in the village came and sat there and for 3 weeks fed her, cooked for her, helped her go through the house, helped her plan things. They had little celebrations here. They went to the. They was doing everything. This is all she didn't know, and she said, "I didn't know these people."
Yeah.
I think she can't. I think she was American, but she brought her mother over and she passed away there.
Okay.
I didn't know these people. These was my friend's family, and they heard that my mother passed away, and they seen her. But the whole village came out every single day, three or four people. And then when she had the ceremony, they was there. They helped her bury her. They taught her how to traditionally prepare the body to be buried. Not just, the clothes and the makeup. No, there's a whole tradition behind it. There's a whole ritual behind it. We don't have that. That helps us with the grieving process.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is one of the reasons why we struggle so much when people pass to the next round, because we don't have that process. Just when someone passed, they go on a journey on the other side. We don't know how long that takes. We go on a journey too. Mm-hmm. And when we don't have that in place, this is why we get depressed. Mm-hmm. This is why we become suicidal. This is why we do all types of stuff, because part of that, what we also do is isolate ourselves too.
Mm-hmm.
And while isolation is needed to some degree, because it's called balance, it shouldn't be a full isolation.
Mm-hmm.
We still need, because when in tradition, when you leave the person who's grieving, they give them stuff to do. Okay, now you need to do boom, 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 boom. So when they come back the next day, or when they come back, they wasn't left by, they was too busy doing something else. Even if it was just something as, I need you to go outside and plant those flowers. You know your mama liked those flowers. Go plant those flowers. Or go tend the yard. You know, your mom used to keep her yard clean. Go ahead and fix the yard. So now you out there, you know what I'm saying? Thinking about your mama because it's something that she does.
Yeah.
So you're still engaging and acting with the answers to that transition.
Yeah.
But you're not thinking of it in a negative way.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the most important thing about it, is how can we release those negative emotions that hold us down?
Well, that's where we'll stop. We'll leave the people with some homework. Say it again.
How do you release the negative emotions that hold us down when our loved one transition?
You've given the people many suggestions.
I hope so.
You have. They have. So I think that the homework is to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
it's for us to figure that out for themselves. So, yes, Kinke Lucas, go ahead.
I want to say this. Don't knock the simple things.
Mm.
Don't knock the things that our parents, some of our parents used to do unbeknownst to them. And we don't know why they did it. And it would have been simple things.
Simple thing. Well, you talked about listening, and we know people have issues with the church for, you know, lots of reasons, but there is something about that epigenetic transmutation.
Mm-hmm.
There is something about that gospel music that can awaken that DNA, those cells. There is something about the things that, like my grandmother used to sweep the steps every morning. Mm-hmm. Now I know that's linked to the little something that those who know, I don't need to talk about it on the podcast,
mm-hmm.
right? There, but like you said, there's things that they did, very simple, not to knock. So this was great.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. We could go on and on and on. We'll have to do a part two, but I want to have you let the people know, first of all, how can they find you?
Okay.
And how can they support you and your work?
Kinke, well, flowingwaters.com, flowingwatersllc.com, is the website, and you can contact me at contact@flowingwaters.online,
okay.
Or kinke@flowingwaters.online. How can you support me? I'm trying to remember. If you want to support me with funds, I say I prefer for you to contact me in regards to how you heal. Because
okay.
money comes and goes. Is a physical thing that doesn't transfer over in any realms that will help me continue my life path. Right? But me but you coming and saying, hey, how can we work together in this healing journey? Will. And out of that also comes reciprocity, because ain't nothing free, but you've given it more to the ancestors than you are giving to me, because we're in exchange of working together.
Mm.
So that's how I look at that. Don't just give me money to be giving money. No, right? Come get some healing work done.
I love it.
Let's do some workshops. You know,
yes.
Let's get a group together and, you know, let's do that. And in that, the money will come. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
But let's do this in rest prostrate. How can we heal each other? How can we make sure that when we transfer to the next side that we're doing right?
I mean, Kinke Lewis, everybody. I mean, I don't know what more to say, but I know that the people have been blessed and edified from this conversation.
You can open the doors of the church. You ain't got to close the doors. Look. See that? Your mom is sick. You can open the doors of the church.
Now, I know, Kinke, we wrap it up. Now, I know we ain't going to talk about that man locking them people in the church.
You can stay open.
That man's side. Lock the doors. He said, he's acting like Onija, girl, I hope you're okay. $20,000 or more, like, and land. Like,
look.
He said, lock the doors, but we're not locking the doors.
The doors are open. We like to live in balance and harmony over
here. We're leaving the light. Listen, we're leaving the doors open for y'all. We're leaving the light on, the porch light on for you.
Like, water and some bread on the table.
We got the water. Drink something. Like, shout out to Amber Khan. Drink something. Oh my gosh. Yo. Okay, we're not doing that. We're wrapping up.
We're wrapping up. I appreciate you for holding space for this.
Thank you. It's a very important
topic, and
very.
I look forward to hearing all your podcasts that you're.
Thank you.
They're gonna be great. They're gonna fill people's spirit, and they're gonna fill it in abundance.
Yes.
So thank you, and absolutely. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Akinke. It was so good, and it was so perfect that we set it off together.
Set it off. So, I'm not going to say nothing.
You better save it for part two.
You said set it off. I'm like, oh, just crazy Tifa up in here. So I'm going to come out like, I'm going to take that. You go, that car.
What's her name? Cleo? Was it Cleo?
Cleo, we just set it off. That was bad.
Oh, my God.
Love it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
That's how you get Miko.
This is it. This is it. This is the laughter. This is the healing. This is what we need. So, you know, the truth is that we definitely can prepare for some losses, but never others.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of us find ourselves grieving conversations that we'll never have, apologies that will never come, and the years we've lost to things we couldn't fix. So next time on Coming to the Brink, we're going to dive into one of the hardest parts of caregiving, making medical decisions for somebody when your relationship has been anything but edifying. So I'm going to just invite you all to join me as I unpack the impossible choices, the guilt again, the second guessing, and the weight of responsibility that nobody prepares us for. Because when the past and the present collide, how do we find a way forward? So if you have ever had to care for somebody who's hurt you, I want to hear your stories. I want to hear from you, as I said on the last podcast. Send me your thoughts, your voice notes, and your stories, because none of us should have to stand on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I will see you soon.